sex and happiness.
Both enrich our lives, change our lives in ways that make life worth living. Yet it's surprising how few people can honestly say that they enjoy regular and fulfilling sex or describe themselves and their lives as happy.
Want you to make me feel like I'm the only girl in the world. Like I'm the only one that you'll ever love.
Host Lori Handlers helps you to explore, learn about, and most importantly, have great sex. And in the process, she helps you to experience real intimacy and happiness.
Sex and happiness.
You'll laugh a little, learn a little, and we hope put a smile on your face and a smile in your life. Now here's Lori.
Hi, everybody. This is Lori Handlers, and you're listening to Sex and Happiness, a program about sex and happiness, and I'm thrilled to be here with you today. I have quite a show lined up. The question today is about cheating. Cheating. Ugh. It seems to be a huge challenge for people in love, for couples who have entered monogamy, whether they're gay or straight. It seems to be even a bigger problem for our society at large. Cheating in every aspect of life. The presidents cheat, large companies cheat us, and it maybe is present in our every single interaction, cheating. My guest today knows something about cheating. Actually, I've invited her to the show because she blogged about cheating. Her name is Sari Cooper. She's a relationship and sex therapist who's been in private practice for 20 years. Her blog, Sex Esteem, can be found on her website, saricooper.com. Some of her past writings include The Loss of Sexual Desire and How to Talk to Your Partner About the Sex You Want. Sari, welcome to Sex and Happiness.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you. I want some light shed on this because I have to tell you that cheating is probably the biggest reason that I've ever broken up with somebody. I'd have to say that in maybe my most intense relationship of my life, cheating caused us to end because I couldn't deal with it. I couldn't put up with the lies. So it's a subject that's near and dear to me. I have to say maybe I even avoid intense relationships like that since, and I know I can't be the only person.
Well, actually, you bring up an important fact, which is that most marriages that are ending due to infidelity, or they most couples that I see who come into therapy, a lot of them are coming in because of some sort of affair or infidelity. So it's very common, and I see it a lot.
And it's got to be a huge problem, either spoken about or not spoken about. It seems like even in the most enlightened relationships, I mean, the relationship I'm talking about, I was dealing with a high quality, highly evolved, highly transformed individual, and this person just simply could not stop cheating. And I don't even think that this person was excited about the sex he was having or allegedly having with the partners he was cheating with. I think it was just the notion of getting caught, something exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's interesting because, you know, we're getting into the subject matter of the various reasons of why people cheat.
Yeah, why do they cheat?
You know, I don't think there's any one answer for all people. But so the first thing you're talking about is the notion of excitement or arousal, actual erotic arousal, around crossing a line and the possibility of getting caught. And, you know, what arouses us and turns us on are things that come from our early on in our life. They're imprints, you know? And so there may have been an incident or an experience that this guy had as a kid that where he would get in trouble, and yet it was exciting.
Yeah, he got attention, got a lot of attention that way.
And that's called, in psychology, we call that a secondary gain. So there's the first gain of, you know, doing something that's crossing a line, but the secondary gain, the kind of emotional payoff, if you will, is the fact that he got a lot of attention. People thought he was so charming and cute because he did this thing, he crossed the line. So it's not as simple as just crossing a boundary.
I'm clear about that, which is why I'm not in that relationship anymore. It wasn't simple at all. I went on to Wikipedia, and mm-hmm. I looked up the definition of cheating, mm-hmm. and it said, cheating refers to the breaking of rules to gain advantage in a competitive situation. The rules infringed may be explicit, or they may be from an unwritten code of conduct based on morality, ethics, or custom, making the identification of cheating a subjective process. Cheating can refer specifically to marital infidelity. That's, you know, as far as I went with it. So it sounds like the lines aren't even clear.
Well, you know, that definition actually brings up 2 points. So I'll go to the second one first, which is the lines not being clear. And I think it's a great point, because when couples get together, there are sort of explicit rules that they've set with each other. And then there's a whole host of implicit rules, nonverbal rules, where partners sort of expect that the other person agrees with them about these rules. And what I find time and time again is that there are these unwritten codes or rules that have been set up early on in a relationship that partners never spoke about. And so when a line is crossed, one partner says, why are you doing that? That wasn't our deal, our contract. You know, so if one person is the one who, I'm going to be dramatic, okay? One person is the person who messes up all the time, and the other person can clean up a mess. And that person actually, coming back to that secondary game again, feels great because he or she is the powerful one. They get to lord it over the other one. And, you know, that's how they define themselves, as a cleaner-upper.
That becomes some dance, though, after a while.
Exactly. At the beginning, it might have been exciting or empowering or, you know, set up this power dynamic. After a while, one of them or both of them may not like that role so much. And then one of them, if one of them changes, let's say the other, you know, the person who messed up all the time or was less organized or less with it or didn't earn that much money, let's say, if that person in the partnership changes, the partnership changes and the contract changes. Oh. And unconsciously the other person gets upset. Like, wait a minute. What role do I have here? You're changing the rules of the game.
So this would be, I think what you're describing is really a typical, more typical monogamous relationships or marriages where people don't necessarily discuss their agreements or they don't discuss their contracts. Although in today's world, there are people who live together or people in more loosely defined relationships or relatings, and lots of people do make contracts and they do make agreements, and even so, those agreements are often broken. So it seems like this is a challenge that's not going to go away anytime soon. This is something that seems implicit in a couple. Is that, am I wrong? Am I oversimplifying this?
I don't think it's, well, first of all, look at, not every couple has an infidelity. Let's just be clear about that.
Okay.
I think there are certain types of people who are more apt to break contracts or cross over lines that were either implicit or explicit. And I think that goes back to that definition that you recited, to the point of, you know, the power position. So there's some people who really see the world through a power lens. They're either on top or they're on the bottom. And those people who seek power, that's how they sort of define every relationship. So crossing that line to get someone to sleep with them is more about them than about that person.
You mean more about them, the person who's seeking the power, than about the person that they're soliciting?
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that people, and it's happened to me too, that people might target the person, the object of the seduction, as being the wrong one. But in fact, it's actually the partner who's...
Yes, it's really
the seducer
more about them.
Is really,
it's really yeah. more about them, and I think we're getting close to sort of defining who, what type of person or character is more likely to cheat.
So this is a great place to take a break, because this will keep people on the edge of their chair, because I want to know what kind of character is more likely to cheat. So if you've just tuned in, you are listening to Sex and Happiness, and I'm Laurie Handlers, and my guest today is Sari Cooper, and she's a relationship and sex therapist, and she's in private practice, and she is discussing with us today cheating and infidelity, like what it means in a relationship. And we're just coming up to this cliffhanger, like who is most likely to cheat? And we're going to, of course, discuss that when we come back after break. So I'd like you to all stay tuned. I want to remind you about my teleseminars that you can go online and get at butterflyworkshops.com. You will find teleseminars about different aspects of sex, mostly expanded orgasm, from very different angles, all kinds of different ways to expand orgasm. So I encourage you to go there, butterflyworkshops.com. We'll be right back. Wondering what book you should read to jumpstart your sex life and increase your happiness? Try my book, Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy by me, Laurie Handlers. This short, easy-to-read book will make you laugh at yourself, and it may possibly make you cry as you discover my tantric secrets for happiness and how they apply to you. In the book, I begin with the 10th law, make love in the unknown. And then I work you all the way through laws 1 through 9 to teach you how to be in the unknown, fresh, every moment of every day of your life. Sex and Happiness puts the innocence and love back into sex and gives tantra the respect it deserves. It's only $19.99 in paperback and $14.99 ebook. Go to sexandhappiness.com to order your copy of Sex and Happiness by me, Laurie Handlers.
Are you in pain or unable to sleep? Ever hear about how the body needs glutathione for natural cleansing? Could you use a boost of energy? Try Life Wave Patches. There are a variety of patches to choose from. Each one of them is designed like a small band-aid to help your body with the challenges of life when you're simply not getting what the body needs for support. And you can use these amazing patches on your pets. Go to Life Wave Patches for Pets and People on Facebook and see Suzanne Summers' interview with Dr. David Schmidt about patches that reduce stress and inflammation while increasing energy. You can also find out more at ValerieHandlers.com. That's ValerieHandlers.com. Or call Valerie at 714-928-6399 to order your patches, or consider becoming an independent LifeWave distributor. That's 714-928-6399.
We're back with Sex and Happiness, and I'm Laurie Handlers, your host. And today I'm with Sari Cooper, who is a sex therapist and relationship therapist in private practice. And she runs a blog that you can get at her website, Sari Cooper, S-A-R-I, Cooper, COOPER.com. And you can find some of her other hot topics, like how to talk to your partner about the sex you really want. So we're talking about cheating, and we were just getting to who is most likely to cheat. So is there a profile?
There are some profiles. So the first kind of profile I want to talk about are people who are narcissistic. And that word has been around now for a long time. But I don't think people necessarily know it when they see it or know it when they meet it. And the narcissistic person is someone who has very low levels of empathy. They are generally can be extremely charming, and their level of narcissism is generally based on something very shallow, like their looks or their power or their wealth. And as long as those or one of those things is at a high level, they're feeling great about themselves. And so they're really about charming people. And each time they charm someone, they're using that narcissistic power of theirs, and that's a real turn-on. But they don't think about or feel about the consequences of that kind of action on their partners.
I feel you're describing the Bill Clinton syndrome,
mm-hmm.
Perfectly when you talk about a narcissist. And I've never been in a room with him, and I'd love to. I mean, I could have cheated with Bill Clinton. The friends of mine who have met him said that he had the ability, if you were in a room with 100 people and he was talking to you, you, the receiver of his attention, felt like there was nothing else and nobody else in the room. Like the whole room went away except for you and him.
I've heard the same thing from people I know who've met him or even worked with him. And from, you know, straight men as well as women.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that. That totally demystifies it. I love it. Go ahead.
Right, because, you know, he knows how to charm people, and it comes naturally to him. I mean, he just has that it. You know, that thing. And so that's when you see a lot of these celebrities being caught in sex scandals or even politicians. You're seeing this kind of profile. It's not anyone who runs for office. You know what I'm saying?
There's
a certain profile of a person who wants power and who wants to be in the limelight, tend to be more narcissistic.
Can you, there's that old, it's not a joke, but it's a statement about the scorpion and the frog, and the scorpion asked the frog to escort him across a body of water because he can't swim and he promises not to sting. And then they get across the body of water, and just as they've made it across to the other side, the scorpion stings the frog. And as the frog is dying, the frog says, "Why did you do that? Why did you sting me?" And the scorpion says, "Because I can."
It's what they do. And the problem is when a person gets into a relationship with a narcissist, they're falling for them. You know, and I think then we get into some of the issues of early relationships. You know, that early period when you start falling for somebody, you're in a total different state of mind than you are maybe 2 years in. It's that state where you, if you're really falling in love with someone, you become obsessive about that person. All you can think of is that person. All your chemicals are running through your body. I mean, you can't necessarily make a sound, practical decision.
It's infatuation. You're talking about infatuation.
Correct.
And the honeymoon where there's endorphins and pheromones and all these things, all these biological things, and T-cell production and all kinds. Like, I've actually heard that when you're falling in love, your immune system is boosted. You're
right.
Less likely to fall prey to a disease or to a cold or even the flu.
Right. And, you know, Helen Fisher, who's an anthropologist and who's done a lot of work on research of people falling in love, talks about this period as, you know, where you become sexually very possessive of that person. And so it's hard to see that kind of lack of empathy during that period, because that person, if they are a narcissist, is totally into you.
Right, and they're courting you, and they're showing you their best side.
Right.
A friend of mine calls that they're showing you their representative. It's not really them, but it's their representative who's showing up.
It's their
to court
half.
You.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And so so I think that's one thing to basically look out for. But, you know, one thing that I need to sort of say here is that it's not just most people think men cheat more than women. And I think up until a few years ago, that was probably true. I mean, it's still, I think, more men than women. But I have to say that the stats are getting pretty close. A recent statistic is that 50% of married women and 60% of married men is going to have an extramarital affair at some point in their marriage.
So, well, I think we can explain it as before, men had more access. Like men, because of men's work taking them out of the house and going into different arenas for work, et cetera, they had more access to being away from home and also more access to single available women, maybe in the workforce, in the work pool. But that's evened out now. Women, I mean, the workforce is made up of more women anyway. Women are more out of the house, and also women are more in this power thing you're talking about. Women have masculinized themselves to a certain extent, and so they're seeing other beings as conquest and as power producing as well. I just think it's the masculinization of the culture. Not that many people are living in their feminine aspect, so to speak.
Well, I think, again, like, I think you're right. I think part of it has to do with certainly being in the workplace and having more power. I also think the internet is a great leveling playing field. You know, I mean, people, married people can go online to a website like Ashley Madison and find other married people who want to have affairs with them. And, I mean, you know, it's not like just a small amount of people. They have 3.5 million members on Ashley Madison.
Wow. I don't even know what Ashley Madison is. I know about adult friend finders because
right.
I know people on that, but I didn't even know what that was, what that is. So these are people who are kind of bored. Well, whatever they are, they're not adhering to a traditional one-on-one relating. They need to have more stimulation than that. So this is one of the ways that they get more stimulation by either swinging or seducing or whatever other couples or other individuals.
Right. So let's talk about some other reasons, maybe, why people cheat.
Well, there. I want, before you do that, I wanted to ask you, is there another personality type? You you mentioned a narcissistic. Is there something else?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the sort of lenses through which we've been looking at people and understanding couples, especially in the last 10 years, even though it's a longer field of study, is through attachment. And how were people attached when they were growing up? And when I say attached, I mean, you know, when you were a kid, when someone was a kid and they wanted to get attention and get their needs met, were they generally getting them met when they needed them? You know, that's someone who's securely attached. You know, when they cried, someone came to them. When they had something wrong, someone put a Band-Aid on that. It's funny. I was at a B&B this past weekend, and I talked to this couple, younger married couple, and one of them talked about how one of the stories he recalls when he was little was he cut himself on his head in the house. He was bleeding pretty a lot, and his father came down and looked at it and said, "Oh, you cut yourself. I'll go get you a Band-Aid. Just hold on." And he went back upstairs, and he proceeded to continue to wallpaper the wall. And not until he had finished what he had started with the wallpaper did he get the Band-Aid and then come back downstairs and look at the boy's cut and go, "Oh, you know what? I think maybe we need to take you to the hospital." So this is what this man, who's now 30-ish, right, is telling me. And I mean, this is not in a clinical setting. So this is what he remembers. So this is not someone who is securely attached. This is someone who might be anxiously attached because they're not sure. Maybe sometimes the father was there and sometimes not. Or maybe he was actually not attached at all. It was like maybe some sort of cool attachment. And that person might grow up to be more avoidant about attachment.
I see. So, yeah, because attachment would lead to pain and suffering.
Yeah.
It would lead to an expectation that would be unfulfilled.
Continually.
If people set up the same patterns over and over again, this person would attract people who might not be there for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand that one too deeply to go into.
So if you choose someone, you know, because you're avoidant, if you decide to be with someone, they have to sort of, again, when we're talking about implicit rules, like, "I'm not going to be around much. Don't count on me too much."
Right.
Don't count on me too much.
Right. This is good. This is a good place for us to pause for a second. So we've just reviewed two kinds of circumstances that might produce infidelity, one being the narcissist, choosing a person who goes on charm, looks, power, and maybe wealth, and just sweeps us off our feet with attention,
mm-hmm.
contrasted to the person who is not too attached, a person who avoids attachment based on things that also happen in their early childhood. So this is great stuff. I'm talking to Sari Cooper, and we're talking about infidelity and cheating and the types of people who might cheat and how this is a challenge for the agreements and the contracts that people want to live by when they're getting into a marriage or they're getting into a serious relationship. So when we come back, we're going to delve more into this, like what should people do? What are some practical things people should do? What should they look for, etc.? Please stay tuned. We will be right back with Sex and Happiness.
How would you like to lose up to a pound a day with no exercise required, with no hunger, without being on a restrictive diet for the rest of your life, and no unpleasant side effects? If this appeals to you, you want homeopathic HCG. How do you get that? You go to hormonenurse.com. That's HORMONE, nurse.com. There you can find out about HCG and this amazing diet. It's a diet I've used, and I've lost an amazing amount of weight. I'm back to my college size. Plus, you'll find out about hormones, bioidentical hormones. Perhaps you need that too. You need it maybe for sleep, for sexual passion again, your libido. Go to hormonenurse.com.
Have you ever wished for an end to pests in and around your home, around your office? Stop paying for dangerous chemicals that can harm your children, your pets, and your clients. Today in Arizona and Florida, an environmentally responsible pest control company named Ladybug has set up shop to provide natural and organic pest control services. Ladybug can help you stop even the most persistent, nastiest bugs with green, organic products that are friendly to people and pets. In addition, there are franchise opportunities in Arizona, Florida, and throughout the USA. To learn more about Ladybug's home-friendly and earth-smart green pest control services, visit the Ladybug website at ladybugcorp.com or call us at 561-276-7600. Ladybug guarantees you another eco-friendly, pest-free day, naturally.
You're listening to Sex and Happiness, a show about sex and happiness, and I'm Laurie Handlers, and I'm here today with Sari Cooper, and she's giving us some eye-opening descriptions of what to look for in terms of cheating, or maybe in terms of seeing ourselves in a clear light for the first time. If you're listening to the show and you're a cheater, I mean, maybe you're seeing yourself. Maybe you have the Bill Clinton syndrome. I don't know. So what to do? Now we've identified types of people, and what do you do? I'm very interested to know what happens when these couples come to see somebody like you. Does this ever stop? Is it possible for this to stop?
I think it depends what kind of personality you're dealing with, you know, who's walking in the door. You know, many couples stay together after there's been an infidelity, actually. Surprisingly, but most lay people are surprised when I tell them that.
Why are they surprised?
Because I think many people have a very Puritan, black and white, view of these rules, you know, thou shalt not cheat, you know, and people I think for themselves too. If my husband or wife cheated, that would be it. It would be over. And in the abstract, that's how they feel about it. But when it actually happens, it's a devastating experience if you're the one that's being cheated on. Your whole world goes upside down. It's a traumatic event. And that's what I tell couples, first of all, because especially the initial stages of finding out, the person who has been faithful, I'll put it that way, really feels like they don't know what to trust, you know, their gut. And usually they've sensed it a little bit. So they feel like they've, or if they didn't, they feel like, oh my God, where was my radar?
Yeah.
I must really be off my game here that I can't trust my instinct.
My theory about it is that people always know on some level, and it's just what I think about it, and I also think that there are signs and clues, and maybe they're not strung together, but there are definitely, because I feel like people leave signs. They do, and sometimes they're blatant, and the person is just in denial or something. That's my thought about having worked with a lot of people.
Certainly that happens, but mm-hmm. I've also seen the other side of it, which is that maybe if they had this sort of pattern of spending days apart initially in their relationship mm-hmm. because of work, and they had a certain schedule and a certain pattern, that is their normal. So
right.
time spent apart is not necessarily something to raise their, you know, raise any sort of radar, because they've always done that, and there wasn't always an affair going on, you know.
Right. I see what you're saying. Yeah, it could be very devastating there. It's very horrible for trust, and it's terrible for people who are very imaginative, like the non-betrayer person. It's terrible for their self-esteem. It's terrible for, they're always wondering, they're always thinking. I mean, it's kind of like worrying about a child. Now you're worrying about all this.
Right. And there's this obsessive sort of quality that goes on, because then they start running through all this history saying, well, oh my God, so when, you know, let's say it's the guy who cheated, right? The husband who cheated, or the male partner. You know, when he was cheating, oh, so when he said this and this and this, he was really going there. Oh, and then they'll start asking questions. Like the initial stages, it's
right.
quite normal for the non-cheating partner to start asking questions, and sometimes extremely detailed questions, including about the sexual acts.
Yeah, things that will make it really painful.
Well, that's it, you know? So my job in those situations is to go, hold on. It's understandable that you want to know everything because you're trying to make sense. One of the sort of hallmarks of dealing with trauma is that you can't tell the story from the beginning through the middle to the end. And our natural inclination as human beings is to understand the whole story. And so what that person's trying to do is narrate the story now and put in the things that she didn't know, okay? And so the problem is, it's like going to see a movie that has, you know, a lot of blood and guts in it.
Once I was going to say, a horror movie. It's
exactly.
like going to see a horror movie.
Once you see that movie, you can't not ever see it again. You know what I mean? Those images are imprinted on your brain memory. You know
exactly.
what I mean?
Exactly.
And so
I know.
When I say to couples, I'm like, okay, it's understandable that you want to know because, I describe kind of putting it in a narrative and understanding the narrative. But I warn you, there are things that you may not want to, that you're going to ask about that you can then never unknow, and it can worsen the pain.
And then they have a free choice. I mean, when you said you can warn them, but then they have a free choice. And so how many people, what are the odds? Is it 1-to-1, you know, 2-to-1? What are the odds that someone doesn't then want to know? I mean, that they have that much sense and wits about them that they don't go there.
Well, you know what I do is I say, look, how about if we postpone this decision? Because right now, trust me, because I've worked with plenty of couples, you're not in any shape to make this decision. And when you calm down, maybe in 3 months or 4 months, when your whole vision, you know, your whole physical system is on alarm right now, when your physical system has calmed down a little, then we can talk about why you might want to know these things and how it could help you heal.
Do you also suggest, I have to go there, it seems so in this, it's like the elephant in the room that we're not speaking about. Do you also coach them to not be intimate right then and there, you know, to like wait, put their intimacy on hold a little bit? I mean, because it seems to me that having sex with, sleeping with the enemy isn't a great thing either.
Well, it's funny, Lori, that you should say that, because actually what is a very common thing that happens is that after it's discovered, that the couple, the primary couple who's in my office, they don't do it in my office, but they go home and they have tons of sex.
Oh,
tons
really?
Tons of sex, yeah.
Okay.
So the opposite is true. And generally that's because, for a variety of reasons. One of the reasons is the person who was cheated on is scared to death that they're going to lose their partner and feels terrible and feels rejected and feels like, okay, so what's wrong with me?
Right.
I'm going to win him or her back, and I'm going to show her what they're missing, and I'm going to be all that wonderful person I was at the beginning.
It seems like they're rewarding the behavior.
You know, but they're not seeing it in that way. It's more of a power
yeah.
thing. They're seeing
yeah.
they're competing with a third person who's
yeah.
in the relationship.
Who's in the unknown. Sure, sure. I understand.
The unknown third person. And their sort of innate animal instinct is to go, I'm gonna win this one.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. So so there is no typical coaching that you would give them. Like that might be even a healthy sign.
I could predict it. I could predict
yeah.
it. But
right.
I think people are going to do what they're going to do, and then we can process it. But then, those are the early stages. But generally, the next stage, of course, is rebuilding the trust, which is torn, terribly torn.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that it really ever comes back. It's certainly never going to come back to the honeymoon phase and that when the pheromones are flying. So it's not going to be that, but to come back to, I can see how people may have a lot invested with each other. They may have children. They may have properties. They may have families that are very close. They may have businesses together. They may have all this kind of stuff. And I could see lots of reason for patching it. And then I just wonder whether the trust really ever gets rebuilt.
It's a very good remark. One of the things that's also sad about this time, and I keep saying that to them, is that they can never go back to what they were.
Yeah, there's no innocence.
Exactly. It's been lost. And it's sad, and also the person who was cheated upon, it has such rage that was taken away from him or her.
Yeah, see, I was actually saving that to ask you about the rage. It just seems to me that the person must settle for or accept the other person in their imperfection, which that's fine, and yet there's a violation, there's a trespass in the space that never goes away. That just like, it's that thing I read in the beginning where I said that cheating refers to the breaking of rules to gain advantage in a competitive situation. This actually sets that up. The person who cheated now has an advantage. The other person is beholden to them, like no matter what.
It's not, yes.
No?
Yes, they do. And what I try to do in the therapy is to get past the power struggle and try to get more into more the deeper issues that are being played out. One of the things that I've dealt with is a couple who comes in when an affair has been recently discovered, and the person who was cheated upon admits to their own affair that happened years ago that was never discovered as a way of leveling the playing field.
Sure. We're going to take a little break because we're leaving this segment in a very up in the air place. So, yeah, we are. So when we come back, I'd love to go for some resolve, hear some stories where it actually worked out, give people some hope.
Yeah.
If there is, in fact, hope to
there
give
is.
Them. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Sex and Happiness. I'm asking now for the happiness because we're discussing a very delicate subject of cheating. I'm discussing it with Sari Cooper. And when we come back, we're going to find out some of the upbeat or some of the hope that one can look forward to if you find yourself in this situation, either as the person who was betrayed or the person who did the betraying. So please stay tuned to Sex and Happiness. We'll be right back. Many times you've heard my guests and me discuss emotional release techniques. Now you can do emotional release work in the privacy of your own home. In my CD, Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn,
I create a very, very safe and sacred space in which you can do the powerful work I'm known for in my Tantra courses. First, I set you up with the proper positioning and breathing, and then I guide you through emotional states to the beat of tribal African rhythms. Try this CD as an easy way to do your personal clearing work on a regular basis and watch your relationships walk free from emotional baggage. You can order my CD at butterflyworkshops.com for only $20. I believe you're worth it. I hope you do. Go to butterflyworkshops.com and get your copy now. And walk free from emotional baggage.
We're back with Sex and Happiness, and I'm Laurie Handlers, your host. And I'm speaking today with Sari Cooper. You can find out more about her at www.saricooper.com. And you can read some of her blogs about very interesting subjects. And her blog is called Sex Esteem. So obviously she wants you to feel good about what's happening in your life, and even this, even if you live through a cheating situation. So you were talking about how couples often can unmask a previous or an earlier cheat situation, right, when they first come in. And look, there could be all kinds of things, though, too. It could be that somebody feels dominated by the other partner. Somebody's such a nag. Somebody's gotten so heavy, they've eaten themselves into oblivion. They're no longer attractive to the person. Mm-hmm. There's lots of things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you heard them all.
Right. See, I think what happens is, if I give couples tips on how to reestablish trust. The person who cheated, it's important for them to check in so that they're not hounded by their partner. That, you know, they'll call in, say, I'm going to be home in 10 minutes, and then be home in 10 minutes. You know, there's a lot more checking in and reestablishing of trust. Now, after that kind of phase starts to become more routine, you have to start looking at the sex life. You know, a lot of marital therapists or couples therapists, they talk about, you know, they'll treat the trust issues and maybe power dynamics, but they won't actually go into the nitty-gritty of their sex life. And that's where being a sex therapist is really important, because I don't walk away from that. I actually ask a lot about that. And I don't, you know, ask about it in terms of kind of, you know, what kind of sex did you have with this person? You know, what do you want to bring here? But, you know, not detail like that. But what was missed? Because that's been irreparably damaged. Not irreparably, but it's been damaged. And I think there are a lot of things that go on where sex takes a back seat. Because once you've established yourself and bonded and you've done all that great stuff, you know, one of the partners may say, okay, we're done, we're bonded, and put the relationship as a second, third, fourth priority. You know, I was at a party a couple of weeks ago. You know, whenever I tell people I'm a sex therapist, they seem to think that they can just tell me all the intimate details of their life. And this woman said to me, well, it's so funny because I was dead tired. I had spent the whole day with my kids, and then my husband grabbed my hand and put it on his erect penis, and I just said, you have got to be kidding. You are not the priority here. And she told me that, and I thought to myself, you know, this is a marriage that could be headed for a problem.
I was going to say, I hope you gave her your card.
So, and she was actually talking with me as like woman to woman. You get it, right? Well, look, you know, when you have a lot of young kids at home and you're exhausted, yes, it's true. It can be hard to maintain maybe your sexual relationship at the same level. To totally ignore it.
Or to tell someone they're not your priority.
Right. How painful is that to hear?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And so, I think that that's what I help couples with, to reignite what they did find and love in each other, a sense of playfulness. You know, you live in a different city than I do. I live in New York City. But I think people right now across the country are working damn hard, and they're working probably 1.5 to 2 jobs for the same price, the same salary as one, because of the economic crisis we're in. So I think people are really stressed out.
And oh, there's no question. And they're really looking for sex solutions like never before because of the internet. They're looking to sex may be the date, like they, where they used to be able to go out to dinner and do different things. Like having sex might be their date.
Right. And it's a pleasure. They're looking for pleasure centers.
Exactly.
And they're also looking for connection. You know, I've heard so many women in straight relationships go, well, he just wants to have sex. And as if it's in a derogatory way. And I think their boyfriends, their husbands feel terrible shame. Like somehow, you know, yeah, I do want sex. What's wrong with that? You know? And the women are coming at it from, well, I think he's just using me as an object. And I think they get into sort of a political thing here. And I think the thing that I try to tell my clients and educate them is that sex, people have sex for all sorts of reasons. They have it to just help themselves go to sleep. They have it to really bond with their partner. And even if it's not romantic, a lot of men regard their sexual connection as bonding time. And they may not be able even to articulate it, because men aren't usually as verbal as women. But women, you know, and men have sex for all sorts of reasons.
Sometimes
and
just a release, like just a stress release.
Exactly.
They have it. And then sometimes other. I mean, I encourage people to have dates. I encourage people to plan. I've had people on the show that have talked about practices that people can do to spice up their sex life, which have been amazing. People who have been married for 35, 40, even 50 years, start looking at that again. Start
planning,
paying attention.
Creating, surprising. And really talking about what I talk about with couples is their erotic life. Not necessarily how often, you know, how do we do it. I talk to them about what really turns you on. Does your partner really know what turns you on? They may know maybe a portion. You know, that's the other thing that I think is a big myth, you know, that once you've been married for 30 years, you know everything there is to know about your partner. And I actually think that's the opposite.
Yeah, it is the opposite.
I actually think it's a way of protecting yourself from not wanting to know the unknown because it might feel too scary.
Well, someone suggested to me that if we were to look at people's relating as a bell-shaped curve and people getting very invested in their partners, that rather than telling them the biggest kink or the biggest turn-on that would exist at either end of the bell-shaped curve, they both kind of bring each other into the middle and they have vanilla sex. They have lukewarm vanilla sex. The bonding takes place, but the kink or whatever the real turn-on coulda, woulda, shoulda been gets crossed off their tables in an effort to, like, keep staying in relation with each other and not shocking the other with, oh, I really have this in me.
Get shocked. I mean, sometimes couples will say, I really do like to be tied up. And an initial expression, I mean, that's where my work comes in, because I really lay the groundwork for partners to listen with curiosity and not judge. I mean, that is kind of a framework and a foundation that I set up before we can start talking about this, because there's so much shame as it is in our culture and maybe in people's upbringings that, you know, a partner isn't going to come out and say, you know, I really do like having sex in public. Like, and the other person will, you know, and you don't want your partner to go, you what? Oh, that's disgusting. You know, I mean, because it's really devastating. This is your most intimate thing. This is the thing that turns you on. So there are no rules about it, right? There are no, this is good,
nope.
This is bad. No, it's
nope.
All like, you know, I like spaghetti with tomato sauce. I like spaghetti with, you know, I like anchovies on my pizza. Oh, you do? Well, yeah, I do. And that's where self-esteem comes in.
It's that's so great.
The ability to say, I like this. It really turns me on. I don't know why it turns me on. It just does. Would you do that for me? And I always tell couples, every time you do something for your partner, it's a gift. It's a gift.
Are you saying that there's a chance? I don't know what the odds are, but is there a chance that if people spice it up and really start listening to their partners and their partners, like, whatever needs, you know, any anchovies, no anchovies needs, that there's a chance that cheating might stop?
Oh, yeah.
I do.
I mean, listen, I think there's some people who are going to cheat no matter what. And I think we went through some, you know,
couple of
those kind of profiles. But I do think in other situations, it's more about feeling hurt, feeling dismissed, feeling ignored, not the priority, loneliness.
Or even feeling midlife crisis.
And midlife crisis, you know.
Yeah.
And feeling like you missed out.
Right, right.
But I think that the secret is to really teach people that there's so much that they probably have never explored together, that there's a way to talk about sex and communicate about what you want and what you need and what you want to try, but that you have to be willing to put your 2 feet in there and do the work. But many couples do stay together, and they don't just go back to status quo. They really transform their relationship.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for that upbeat note on which we're going to end this interview today. I appreciate you so much for bringing the light that you shed on this topic for us, because it's certainly a topic that I know that most people would just throw their hands up and not know what to do. So it's good to know that you exist.
Yes, thank you.
So thank you, everybody, for listening today to Sex and Happiness with Sari Cooper about cheating and betrayal and what you can do. And you can find her once again at saricooper.com, SARICOOPER. I'm reminding you again about my teleseminars, recently done teleseminars. In the future, I'll be doing some other things, like a webinar series about the mastery of self-love. And I also plan an anger management series, which has to do with body perspective, not necessarily controlling your anger, but actually managing it through letting it race through your body and letting yourself vibrate with it rather than putting a lid on it, of course, in a safe space. So those are some things that are coming up. My next show is going to be about stupid myths about sex, a panel of people discussing the ridiculous things we were told about sex when we were growing up. So please tune in for that. This is Laurie Handler signing off for Sex and Happiness. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you for joining us today for Sex and Happiness. To learn more about Laurie and her work, please go to butterflyworkshops.com or follow her on Twitter or Facebook. You can send her an email at sexandhappiness@gmail.com. And if you'd like to listen to podcasts of Laurie's previous show, Tantra Cafe, please go to tantracafe.com. We'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Sex and Happiness. Want you to make me feel like